All right, good morning, everyone. Welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. Today is June 9, 2022. We're here for our third of three oral cases this morning. A220111, Minnesota Voters Alliance versus the Secretary of State. Counsel, you'll each have 15 minutes for your primary argument. The appellant will have an additional 5 minutes for rebuttal. These matters are being recorded. No other recordings are allowed in the courtroom. I'd ask that you state your name and your client before you begin your argument. And with that, we are ready to proceed.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Greg Joseph. I represent the Minnesota Voters Alliance in the matter before the court. Today in the state of Minnesota, we face a crisis of confidence in our elections. This is a foundation of our republic without which consent of the governed is impossible. The matter before the court is an excellent example of why this crisis exists. The legislature enacted 203B121 as a means to ensure a basic measure of electoral integrity. Put differently, the statute was not written to ensure that all ballots count. Rather, it was written to ensure that all valid, legal ballots count. Because voter disenfranchisement is no less real when a legitimate vote is canceled by a fraudulent ballot than if a valid ballot were not counted at all. But the safeguards established by the legislature have been destroyed by the Secretary of State's Administrative Rule 8210-2450, rendering compliance with the statute impossible. We'll never know the number of ballots that were invalid or questionable that the rule forced ballot board members to accept against their best judgment, because the secretary provides no such information on this point. The statute expressly reserves discretion for citizen ballot board members and election judges to use their own wisdom, experience, and expertise in comparing signatures. It also requires training under 203B121 subdivision 1 to do this effectively. The secretary's rule has stripped this discretion away and centralized decision-making in St. Paul. It's well established, as this court's aware, that where a rule and statute conflict, the statute prevails. The rule in this case has gone one step further in that it actually conflicts with and contradicts itself, rendering any compliance impossible.
This I'm going to ask you just as the initial question, do you think the statute is ambiguous?
I do not. I don't, Your Honor.
Okay.
Is there a specific section you had in mind, Judge?
No. Okay. No, just that there's some cite to legislative history, which we usually don't go to if a statute is unambiguous.
I understand. I feel it's straightforward, Your Honor. I'd argue it's unambiguous.
Let me ask you this question, and I'll ask the other counsel the same question. Do you think this case should be precedential? And if yes, what would the syllabus point be?
I do think it's precedential as to the first point, Your Honor. Could you clarify the second part of your question, Judge?
If it's precedential, we have to have a statement of the rule of law that we're making precedential. What would you have that rule of law be?
I don't think the court needs to make any changes. I think the statutes are all in harmony with one another. So I think that we could say that the rule is that 204C15 harmonizes the main objection that the respondent has. So I don't think the court needs to make any changes.
Do you agree that one of the primary purposes of the statute and the rule was where the identification numbers don't match, that then you look at the signatures to see if they harmonize? Do you think that's one of the main issues it was trying to address?
Under 2B3, under 203B121 subdivision 2B3, I do. And that's to be performed by election judges. Whereas 2B2 is broader, and we argue it's reserved for ballot board members in general, mm-hmm. which are two different parties, obviously.
Mm-hmm. Ballot board members are not authorized to accept a signature that's not that of the voter. Doesn't that then go to the election judges?
Your Honor, are we talking about subdivision 2B2?
Yes, 2B2.
Okay. So my reading, Your Honor, is that the majority of the members have to be satisfied that the voter signed the certification on the envelope. So the secretary is going to argue that that should really mean that a signature appears on the envelope. We're arguing that the decision has to be made that the voter signed the envelope rather than having a signature on the envelope.
Well, I don't mean to be simplistic, but I really can't ferret out how this is in conflict with the statute, which is your entire argument, that the companion rule does not allow the interpretation of that. So what stands out as the biggest conflict?
Your Honor, so the information that ballot board members and election judges have to work with, okay, at this point, the subject of this litigation, is they have the application for the absentee ballot and a signature on that application, and they have a signature on the ballot envelope that gets returned once the ballot gets sent back in. So you have these two signatures, and then you have the numbers that are discussed in subdivision 2B3. Okay, the driver's license.
I understand that, as if the numbers are in conflict, then you're going to look further.
And that's in subdivision, that's in 2B3. That's in 2B3, right. So the conflict comes when the administrative rule forbids ballot board members or election judges to make the decision to reject the ballot based on lack of a signature match.
Does that actually happen, though? I mean, that's really my question, because the statute was enacted in, 2011? And the rule was enacted shortly thereafter. So we have a decade of experience. So my question is, are there actual situations where an election judge is confronted with that situation and feels handcuffed in their ability to reject a signature? And then the second part of my question is, if that actually is the case in a specific circumstance, isn't the remedy to go to district court to have a district court judge decide it?
So, unfortunately, Judge, we can't get to the second part of your question, because the first part of your question, the answer is no. There are no statistics that are kept on that exact point. The closest thing we have is, and this is available on the Secretary of State's website, we have voter number and signature don't match, and those two are lumped into one category.
So what if we had an election judge, right? So an election judge is discharging his or her duties, and then they're prevented from discharging their duties for the reasons that you're identifying. Isn't there a remedy then at that point in time to go to district court to say, I can't discharge my duties, I need an injunction to allow me to discharge my duties?
I think that's possible, Judge, but because we're challenging the administrative rule, this court has primary jurisdiction.
I understand that. I don't disagree with you, but it just strikes me that if this situation were really arising during the course of a ballot review, that we would have some examples at least to inform us a little bit.
Right, and we don't have access to that information, and the secretary doesn't furnish that information.
There, so. I understand.
But one of the other things that people whose absentee ballot is rejected can do is they can petition to have it reviewed and file a lawsuit. And we don't have any examples of that either.
After the ballot was rejected?
Right.
And, Your Honor, I don't know the notification post-election. I don't know what sort of notification a voter actually gets and what difference it would make. But
well, they're supposed to be notified in reading the statute. And the rules, they're notified if their ballot is their absentee envelope, because we don't know what's inside the envelope if that's rejected as not meeting the requirements of the statute.
So then that would come after the election's finished, after the results are tabulated, presumably?
No, they can petition to have their vote counted, whatever ballot they've put inside that envelope, and have a decision made that way.
Okay. I understand. I mean, it doesn't. I understand, Judge. It doesn't affect the fact that the rule irreconcilably conflicts with the directives and the statute.
I was going to ask you a question. The respondents say that you've come up with that you say that election judges have unfettered discretion to use for words, training, experience, wisdom, and judgment to compare signatures, and they say they don't know where you came up with that list of four qualities. Mm-hmm. And I was curious where you did come up with that list.
Well, Your Honor, I think that's editorializing on our part, with the exception of the training, okay? The training comes in Subdivision 1 of 203B121, okay? As for the rest of it, the legislature was silent. And I think it was silent for a reason, because citizen election judges are trusted with this duty. Mm-hmm. This isn't, you know, we don't have any reference to the Secretary of State's rules. People are expected to use their best training and judgment. Not only that, okay, but I'd note that the signature comparison is no longer the primary means of validating a ballot. We now have the numbers that are being used. And that was changed after the 2008 recount, obviously. Those four words, Judge, they were repeated to hopefully put them in your heads more often. But the training portion comes from Subdivision 1. The rest of it is just expressing that we trust election judges to use their best judgment. We think that's the best solution. Mm-hmm. I want to address, I've got a few minutes left here. I want to address the notion that this may pose a conflict with the Voting Rights Act and whether this is an issue with potentially disabled voters returning ballots. So I'd point to that the Secretary mentions, first of all, 645.44, and they argue that this is a right that disabled voters can use the assistance of somebody else when returning a ballot. I'd point out to the court that 645.44 is a definition. It's not a statute that demands compliance. It's a definition that generally applies to a number of different laws, and there's no penalty for failure to adhere to it. That said, even if we were to rope in 645.44 and the language in 204C15, which is the other statute concerning assistance to disabled voters, providing that the disabled voter can employ the assistance of any individual that voter chooses. Even if we did that, we would argue that the same person who assists the disabled voter in signing the envelope and signing the ballot application could comply with the statute. The voter could comply
again,
with the statute.
I'm going back to the statute. The statute does not say that the signatures need to be the same. It says that you check with the identification. So that's where I find flaw with your argument, because I can't even get off of that because the statute doesn't say that.
So Subdivision 2 and Subdivision 3 are separate. Subdivision 2 would be for ballot board members generally to perform this analysis. Subdivision 3 would be after the numbers don't match, we have the election judges on the ballot board perform this duty of signature matching. If the election judges in Subdivision 3 are performing the signature matching requirement, the same person who assisted the voter with signing the ballot, okay, is the same person who assists the voter in signing the application. If those two things are the same, if the same person assists, we have compliance under 204C15. We have compliance under 645.44. Because in Subdivision 3, remember, it isn't, and the Secretary pointed this out as well, we're not testing for the genuineness of the signature of the voter. We're testing for whether the ballot was transmitted to the same person who returned it. So if the same person provides assistance to the voter, then there's no issue, because the person reviewing the ballots could look at that same signature by the same person and conclude that this is the person to whom it was transmitted. Have I answered the question?
Well, you answered my question, but when I look at this, I feel that the companion rule is giving guidance to the board as well as the election judges that are on the board to make these determinations. And so I'm really sitting here yet trying to ferret out where there is conflict, because that is the only reason that we would rule in your favor, is if in fact there is a distinct conflict with the statute. And I'm going to review it again, but that's where I'm lost.
So what I would do, maybe this would be an effective way to do it. Reviewing the 8210-2450 subparts 2 and 3, the language is the same. This use of or lack of full names, nicknames, abbreviations, initials within either signature are not a reason for rejection. A signature is considered the voter's even if a voter uses a signature mark on either or both documents, or if a voter has another individual or different individuals sign the voter's name in their presence. Okay. So what the rule explicitly does is forbids ballot board members from rejecting a ballot even if different people sign different names between the application and the ballot envelope. So the point is, you're allowing discretion.
Well, you're saying that it prohibits election judges from making an informed decision based on their training and so on, and I just don't see where it prohibits them from making that determination.
If an election judge wanted to reject a ballot because, say, the application had an X on it for a signature mark, and the ballot envelope was signed by a completely different person and had the name Schmitty, that scenario, under the secretary's rule, must lead to an accepted ballot. And that can't be reconciled with the reservation of discretion for ballot board members and election judges. I see my time is up.
You'll have 5 minutes for rebuttal. Thank you very much, counsel. I'm just going to remind everyone in the courtroom that there's no recording inside of the courtroom. We are recording this matter, and it will be posted on the website, all right? So there's no additional recording permitted. Counsel, go ahead.
May it please the court. My name is Alan Barr. I represent the Secretary of State in this matter. The court should find the rule valid because there is no conflict between the statute and the Secretary's rules regarding ballot board review of absentee ballot envelopes. To Judge Riley's question as to what the syllabus point should be and how I plan to approach this argument is in two points. First, ballot board members generally have no authority to compare signatures unless an identification number does not match between the application and the envelope. Second, when that number does not match, the statute's requirement for ballot board members to compare signatures and the rule's guidance on what ballot board members may consider when they are doing that comparison do not conflict. Beginning with that first question of whether or not ballot members have general authority to compare signatures, petitioners claim that authority comes from the language that ballot board members are to determine whether or not the voter signed the envelope. That language, however, is interpreted using three canons of interpretation even before you reach whether or not it is ambiguous. Under both the surplusage canon and the whole statute canon, it is clear that that language does not mean that the person whose vote is to be counted necessarily signed the envelope. Instead, the purpose of the voter signed the envelope is to ensure that the voter meets the eligibility requirements to vote, because that signature isn't just a random signature. When you are signing a certification that on election day, you will meet the eligibility requirements to vote. So that first subdivision is just going to whether or not the voter will be eligible and making sure that their vote only counts if they certify that eligibility question. If they do, then there's no reason to go any further, because if ballot board members had authority to compare signatures in this instance, the legislature would have put that in the statute.
Well, don't we have a Supreme Court ruling that says that the ballot board members, excluding the election judges, don't have that authority?
That's exactly right.
That was decided.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Signature comparison is limited to election judge members only in the conditions laid out in Subdivision 3. So generally speaking, they aren't going to have that authority.
So isn't that a case where the language of the rule that ballot board members must compare signatures does not fully align with the language in the statute that election judges must compare signatures?
Yes, Your Honor, but that doesn't mean the rule and the statute conflict. The rule generally lays out duties to ballot board members generally. This specific duty, the statute goes on to say, can only be performed by particular ballot board members. election judges. And certainly, the Secretary agrees that limitation would be read into the rule in light of the Minnesota Supreme Court's recent decision, making clear that that is only a election judge duty, not a general ballot board duty. Additionally, I'd like to address briefly.
So then what do we do with the language of subpart three of the rule? Because it does say the ballot board members must compare the signatures. And I agree that a subset of ballot board members are election judges. Is it just, you know, we're taking that the secretary is going to enforce the Supreme Court's decision in MVA versus Ramsey County, that the non-election judge members of the ballot board are not going to be doing the signature comparison? How is that enforced?
The enforcement of this is, I mean, it's ultimately in instructions to county officials. You know, here's how to do it. So it's then on the county to make sure that they are following this. And so I guess specifically the ballot board members or the school district ballot board members or whoever the ballot board members are. So I guess
I see this, the companion rule is to provide guidance. It's not intending to supplant, replace, do anything in opposition to the statute. It's just trying to say this is how we're going to do it, a roadmap to do it.
And I think that's right. It's guidance in understanding what the statute means. And the two don't conflict, other than this.
It could be better. It could be stated better. But the statute clearly says only the election judges have the privilege of making those signature determinations.
That's right. And I think to directly answer Judge Frisch's point, I think if there were a non-election judge member doing, I don't know who the individual would be, but someone would certainly have potentially have standing to challenge not following the statute. But that enforcement authority, it's not directly coming from the secretary.
Can I just ask, how would someone know if someone who was unauthorized to do the signature comparison make that challenge? I mean, does the secretary make that information available to the public as to who is doing the signature? Or not the signature, the identification comparison?
The secretary does not. That again, this is performed at the county, the school district level. So it's those entities' responsibility to provide that information. And
that is provided?
I don't know, Your Honor, because it's not the secretary's responsibility. I don't know the answer. I'm sorry.
Okay.
Getting to that signature comparison piece, however, when there is a conflict, the rule and the statute do not conflict. The statute says ballot board members have to perform a comparison, but it gives no guidance on how they are to do so. The rule does, but that doesn't mean they conflict. In the province of ordinances and statutes, which is certainly similar to rules and statutes, there's only a conflict if the statute expressly prohibits something that the rule expressly permits, and or if the statute expressly permits something that the rule prohibits. Here, you don't have that. You have a statute that just says election judges do this, and then a rule that says, and here are things you can and cannot consider when you are doing that comparison. That is not a conflict because the rule and the statute are not irreconcilable. It's entirely possible to comply with both of them.
Mr. Joseph said that that the Secretary of State doesn't keep any records on rejected or accepted ballots. How do you respond to that?
That's not true. As Mr. Joseph went on to note, there are records of ballots that were rejected either because of a signature mismatch or a numerical mismatch. It is not broken down into one or the other, but those records are kept in terms of total ballots that are rejected for one of under the statute as under this rule it's currently being applied. First, the number doesn't match, and then moreover, the signature also doesn't match. I do want to briefly address Mr. Joseph's point as to this individual signing having to be the same person, and that argument is undercut by another section of Chapter 645 dealing with definitions and statutes, where 645.08 says that singulars include the plural and vice versa. So when the statute says a person can help with the provide marking assistance, under 645.08, that necessarily means it could also be multiple persons helping with signing assistance. The same is true with the Federal Voting Rights Act. 1 U.S.C. 1, very first section of federal law, says that singulars include the person. So federal law also saying that a person can provide voting assistance means multiple people could provide voting assistance. Because the last point I want to address is, and I understand these are issues the court only reaches if the statute is ambiguous, but to the extent the statute is ambiguous.
Let me ask you the same question. Do you think the statute's ambiguous?
No, Your Honor, I do not. I think that the two of the three interpretive canons clearly support the conclusion that ballot board members generally do not have signature comparison authority. And I think even the third tool, definitions, is only weakly in support of MVA's position because the voter's signature is defined as being the voter's signature, even if signed by someone else under Chapter 645.
Okay, so if we as a panel determine that subpart 3 of the companion rule is not tight enough because it doesn't specifically say only election judges, can we excise that out and leave the rest intact?
I believe you can, and I don't even know that you need to excise it, given that the Supreme Court has already said this is a duty that can only be performed by election judges. So there's already binding Minnesota law making clear that rule only gives authority to election judges. So even if the court concludes that that rule should have been written a little tighter, that's already been dealt with in another case that Minnesota Voters Alliance brought. If the court does find, however, the statute ambiguous, tools for resolving that ambiguity strongly support the conclusion ballot board members do not have general signature comparison authority. This statute was enacted in direct response to the incredibly messy months-long recount of ballots when signature comparison was the norm in the Frank and Coleman race of 2008. The goal of going to a number match was to prevent contests over does the signature match, does it not match, when we have something unambiguous that can be compared, a number. If this court were to say that ballot board members actually still have that authority, it would entirely undercut the purpose of the statute and potentially lead back to Minnesota having these months-long recounts that dragged on and put the election into doubt. Unless the court has any further questions, I would ask that the court find the rule valid and dismiss petitioner's petition.
Any other questions? All right. Thank you very much, counsel. Mr. Joseph, you have 5 minutes for a rebuttal if you choose to use it, sir.
Thank you. Very briefly, Your Honor. So the problem with the Secretary's guidance is that it negates discretion on part of the election judges and ballot board members. This is a plain language case. I would point out a problem with the Secretary's interpretation of 2B2. If it is the case that the language in 203B121 2B2 means a signature appears on the line versus the voter's signature appears on the line, that is undercut by the rule at subpart 2, where the Secretary goes into detail about the requirements of what the signature has to look like. If all it required is a signature, why did the Secretary go through the trouble of delineating exactly what that signature has to look like? Doesn't make sense. It's because the legislature took a belt and suspenders approach. 2B2 and 2B3 are both there for different parties and for different authority under the statute. Additionally,
I'm sorry, I didn't understand what you meant by that. Could you restate it, please?
Sure. The legislature intended to convey authority to general ballot board members under 2B2 and specifically to election judge ballot board members under 2B3.
Thank you.
Of course. Again, I'd point out too, 203B121 could have made reference to 645.44. It did not. This case is about a rule that contradicts itself. It's about a rule that centralizes authority in St. Paul versus allowing diversified election judges to make decisions. There are no other questions. I would ask that the court reject the secretary's rule. Thank you.
Anything else from the panel? All right, thank you very much, sir. I appreciate your argument. We appreciate your arguments and your submissions. We'll take the matter under advisement and issue an opinion in due course. And that concludes our calendar.